award-winning powerhouse voice of radio. Here's your host, Patricia Raskin.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to the Patricia Raskin Show. In our first half hour, we are going to talk about chronic illness and how the doctor-patient relationship is so critical in really working with this. My guest is Dr. Michael Lotchin, MD. His book is The Prince at the Ruined Tower, Time, Uncertainty, and Chronic Illness. And he's really looking at issues that we often don't talk about, like how should patients respond when diagnoses are uncertain? How should doctors respond? How should administrators respond? And this book is about patients and doctors in the healthcare system, written by a physician with broad experience in the world of chronic illness. Let me tell you a little bit about Dr. Lotchin. He's the director of the Barbara Volker Center for Women and Rheumatic Disease, Hospital for Special Surgery, and professor of medicine and obstetrics gynecology at the Weill Cornell Medicine School of Medicine in New York. He's a graduate of Harvard College and Harvard Medical School. He's written two other books, Guarded Prognosis, and also he's written Dancing at the River's Edge with Ida Brill. So I'm very excited to welcome today Dr. Lotchin. Welcome. Welcome, Dr. Lotchin.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
Yeah. You were telling me this, and I think it's so interesting. You know, one of the things you were sharing with me before the show is that there are certain things that are kind of clear cut. Like, for example, if somebody needed an antibiotic, we pretty much know that will work. But as you said, chronic illness is not that clear. And I was sharing a story about a friend of mine who has colitis, who's been through on her third round of different drugs. And, you know, everything's hopeful and she goes through trials and it works for a couple of weeks and then it doesn't. And she's doing everything she can to prevent surgery. But it's not clear cut and it's frustrating to watch and it's painful for her. And so I think, you know, this is something that's so important that you're talking about because, as you also said, many times it seems clear. Well, we'll just put you on this drug and it'll work. But as you're saying in the book, it's not that clear with chronic illness. So please expand on that.
Well, that's absolutely true. And I guess what I'd first start by saying is the difference between chronic illness and acute illness is technically, it's just a description of a short time course versus a long time course. But it really means diseases and events that are curable or one-time events and mm-hmm. those that continue on. And when they continue on, there are a whole host of different things that happen. First, they don't start in an instant and are obvious at the moment that a patient first feels the symptom. Oftentimes it takes weeks or months and sometimes even years to be clear what's happening. Because symptoms just gradually accrue over years and years. And that leads to a great deal of uncertainty. Then clinical trials, when you look at different medications, are necessarily relatively short-term things, 6 months, a year, maybe 2 years, but they don't tell you what happens in 10 years or 15 years. So there's a great deal of uncertainty as well about what treatments work, what do not, because by and large the treatments ameliorate the disease, but they don't necessarily cure them. And it's important for doctors and patients to discuss these things because the expectation that patients have is that you have a diagnosis, you give a drug, it's over. And that just isn't the way the world works.
Well, and the other question I have is, you know, if you go on some of these drugs that you're seeing on television, you know, some of the main ones for chronic illness, because I'm going to give you an example of the friend I was telling you about. Sometimes it doesn't help, and then she'll start complaining about other symptoms. Other things are bothering her now. And I'm wondering if this drug is aggravating other parts of the body. I mean, it's just speculation, but I wonder about that.
Well, it's not speculation at all. One of the things that I talk about in the book is the different time phases of illness, and I divide them into what I call instant clock calendar and generational time. Instant is if you have a fracture or you have a seizure or something, and that's very quick and you act on it immediately. clock time is when you develop a fever and you sit around and decide, do I need to call a doctor, do I not? So it plays out over a few days. And calendar time is like the most of the chronic illnesses, that they develop over months and sometimes very many months. A symptom comes, it goes, comes again, and you sort of think about, is this going to mean something or not? And generational is what you just talked about. And that is that you look at what's going to happen 10 years from now or 20 or 30 years from now. I often deal with very young people, late teens, early 20s, in the types of illnesses that I deal with. I have to think about what they're going to be like at 40 and 60, even though they're only maybe 18 or 19 right now. And that what I'm thinking about is not only what the disease will do, but what the medications are going to do, because all medications have side effects that are unpleasant and sometimes really very dangerous. And that becomes part of the conversation that doctors and patients have to engage in.
So what's the answer to this? I mean, do you think it's just exploring with your doctor and making sure you're both on the same page? I mean, there's no one clear-cut answer to this with chronic illness.
That's correct. And my argument is that this needs to be a conversation and a negotiation. And the harder the information is, like the antibiotic for the specific infection, that's more the doctor sets the priorities and says, here's what I know will work, and so on.
Right.
But the less you know, the more the patient's priorities take are important. And I think patients, if you're talking about, for instance, when I was talking about the time phases, someone may have very severe pain right now. Well, I have ways of dealing with very severe pain, but some of the ways that I deal with it might play out in complications a decade from now. So we have to have that conversation. What's more important to you? To be able to see your kids grow up, or is it more important for you to be relieved right now? And those are where patients will set priorities and tell the doctor what they need most right now. Sometimes it's, I'm going to lose my job, I'm going to lose my family right now, so I need the most aggressive treatment. And others will be, I want to see the kids grow up.
Yeah, that's interesting, because in my friend's case, the one I'm thinking of, she's very physically active. So whatever she did with her doctor, she had to try to find a drug that would keep her moving, you know, that wasn't going to immobilize her, where she wouldn't be sitting a lot, because that's part of what helps her, you know, stay active and stay happy. So, you know, that's, you have to take that into consideration, right? If somebody wants to exercise.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is a daily conversation. For instance, I have a patient right now who's probably right now or maybe in the next few days, it wants to go hiking on Mount Denali in Alaska.
And we
worked out a mechanism by which this would be possible for her. I have patients who are marathoners, and I have other patients who really have none of that interest whatsoever, but are looking at what very long term will be, and don't want any drug side effects.
Interesting. And yet you encourage that person to go to, you know, to travel that far? I mean, you felt that was okay as her doctor or his doctor.
You said encouraged, but I didn't use that word. I said I discussed it with her, and I gave her what I thought were be the problems and what would what the likely outcomes would be. I didn't discourage her. I won't say that I encouraged her, but that was her choice. It wasn't mine.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, but as you said, you give both choices. So we have a few minutes before break. So what is it you really want readers and listeners to know? I mean, what would you say are like five things that are really important? I would say probably one of them is choose your doctor carefully would be one.
That's fair. The most important message is to have an open conversation about what is known and what is not known and make your choices based on that. Another is to understand that in 2017, we think we're really smart. but doctors in 1917 thought they were really, really smart, and doctors in 1957 did, and the doctors in 2117 or 2057 are going to look back and laugh and say, I can't believe they thought those sorts of things. So you have to be open to change and open to new information at all times.
Are you more encouraged? I mean, after all these years, do you feel there have been tremendous advancements? What would you say?
Oh, the world is completely different right now from when I was in medical school. For instance, the things like having heart transplants were unheard of in those days. Even kidney transplants were pretty new, and certainly we didn't know anything about AIDS. We didn't think at all about Alzheimer's in those days. And when I started out, I'm a rheumatologist. I deal with arthritis. Rheumatoid arthritis was almost always a very crippling illness. Right now, it's very surprising.
Yes.
Lupus patients died when I started out. Right now, we're stunned if we lose a patient. But we're working to the point now, not only to save lives, but to make those lives very productive and as close to normal as possible.
Yeah, which is really, really special. I mean, what advancements?
But my point also would be that in 2057, we're going to see just as much, or 2067, I meant 50 years from now, they're going to look back and say the same sort of things. I can't believe what medicine was like back then.
Well, we're now looking at stem cell research, right? And replacing, organs too. That's another whole thing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the changes are astounding, but they're going to continue to be astounding. And I guess that would argue that there's an arrogance that today we know everything we're going to know, and that's inconceivable.
Yeah. Right. All right, we're going to take a break. My guest is Dr. Michael D. Lockshin, MD. His book is The Prince at the Rune Tower, Time, Uncertainty, and Chronic Illness. And this is really it's a book about patients, doctors, and the healthcare system, written by a physician with broad experience in the world of chronic illness. And we'll be right back with Dr. Lockshin right after the break, right here on VoiceAmerica.com, America's Voice. I'm Patricia Raskin.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Have you found the beauty inside of you? Join Bonnie Bonadeo each week for Beauty Inside and Out. We'll explain how beauty plays a part in everybody's lives. Our guests are makeup artists, hairdressers, and doctors. But we'll also feature holistic and wellness specialists and spiritual advisors. You can find that beauty inside and express it to its fullest on the outside. Tune in to Beauty Inside and Out every Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Where are you getting your advice on buying, selling, or maintaining your most important asset, your home? Is it from a reality show on cable TV, a comparison website, or are you just flying by the seat of your pants and gut instinct? Stop now before you make another move. Tune into Real Real Estate Today with host and realtor Deb Tomorrow. You can't afford to play guesswork when it comes to your new or existing home. Listen every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
Want an insider's pass to everything that goes on in Hollywood? Join Summer Helene every week for Behind the Scenes. Summer Helene is known as the Duchess of Hollywood because she knows the insiders, legends, and celebs, and brings the stories, the gossip, and the backstage scoop. It's the real Hollywood, though. So this program is for adults only. Behind the Scenes can be heard live every Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time and 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
You You are listening to The Patricia Raskin Show. If you wish to call into our program today, please call 1-866-472-5788. That number again is 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to patricia@patriciaraskin.com. Now, back to The Patricia Raskin Show.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back. My guest is Dr. Michael Lockshin, MD. His book is The Prince at the Ruined Tower, Time, Uncertainty, and Chronic Illness. And this interview is a book about, and his work is about, patients, doctors, and the healthcare system, written by Dr. Lockshin, who has had broad experience in the world of chronic illness. And he is the director of professor of medicine and obstetrics gynecology at Weill Cornell Medicine, and director of the Barbara Volker Center at the Hospital for Special Surgery. And he explores these questions that we don't often hear. How should and how do patients respond when diagnoses are uncertain? And how should the doctor respond? And how should the insurers and administrators respond? So that's what we're talking about. Welcome back, Dr. Lockshin.
Okay. Welcome. Thank you.
Before I do want to tell some stories, but I would like to answer this question that's in your book. This whole idea of insurers and administrators, you know, that's a whole different thing, because many times they have a book of rules.
Correct.
Right. This is what we're going to cover, and this is what we're not going to cover. And so talk about that, because that can be frustrating also, particularly, I'm going back to my friend again, because her case is so recent in my mind, where she had to really fight for this drug, which was like, oh my God, it was like $10,000. But because she had a certain type of insurance that was different from the other insurances, and they made an exception for her, but she really had to write letters and struggle to get into the system. Because it was, you know, it's $10,000 or whatever it is for drugs are just tough. So talk about that, please.
Okay, well, you hit upon something that I don't deal so much with in the book, but I have a big emotional response to. One of the things about uncertainty and certainty is that doctors are required to use what are referred to as ICD codes or International Classification of Disease codes for every test they request, for every medication they order, and for every office visit for billing for that. The ICD codes, there are 145,000 of them. They imply a degree of certainty that just doesn't exist. And insurers then pick up those codes to make decisions. So not only does it frustrate people like your friend to make sure that the doctor has chosen the right code, it actually makes medical records lies right now, at least shades of the truth, because I know, and I'm sure your friend's doctors know, that there are certain codes that won't be questioned. You won't have to go through this exotic process of trying to get something approved. So you just put down a code that you know will get approved, whether or not it is actually a good description of the patient.
Yeah.
I find that, I say that I'm emotional about that because I find it extremely offensive that I have to write charts that are inaccurate in order to get things done for my patient.
That's a very, very good, very good. If when people listening to this interview, can they write to you or contact you through your website?
They can. The website is my name, Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, Lockshin, L-O-C-K-S-H-I-N, all is one word, .com. Okay. Or I have a Gmail address is LockshinM@gmail.com.
Okay. And they can write you through your website as well.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So tell us some stories or anecdotal stories of patients that you've worked with that kind of illustrate this point and how they got through it, particularly with chronic illness, how they dealt with it.
Yeah, I guess I would bring a handful of anecdotes to this. Some people are really grateful to be told by a physician, I don't know precisely what you have. And the reason that is that I've got patients, and I've got a couple of patients that I describe in chapters in the book, who have just gone from doctor to doctor to doctor, getting different statements that were said, oh, yes, you have this. And then the next doctor would say, oh, no, it's not that. It's Y, or a third doctor would say, no, it's Z. And I would look at them and say, it actually doesn't make a lot of difference what name we use, so long as we know what the process is. That is, what is happening and what we can do about it. And giving the name makes no difference whatsoever. And there are people who have literally burst into tears when I've told them that and said, at least someone is willing to listen. And if I don't fit what the textbook says, that's wonderful with me. I also talk about, and there's a chapter about a girl who went through 5 years, between 5 and 10 years of this, and committed suicide because there was no answer to where she was going. Those are two really, really different ways of approaching it. And I think the physician's role is to try to make sure that the ambiguities that exist are understood and dealt with. And I'm not sure that obviously, because the one girl committed suicide, I can't deal with that adequately with everybody, but I certainly try to. There's one other patient that I emphasize, and when I talk about expressing yourself and speaking, and this young woman was very ill but wanted desperately to have a child, and her doctors basically dictated to her, no way, we're not going to take care of you, and so on. And he was loud, foul-mouthed, literally screaming in the clinic at that day when she was being told that. But what she did was demonstrate to everybody, because we ended up having hospital ethicists and others come in to try to calm the situation. She was saying, you owe me my dignity. You owe me my right to make my own life choices. And for those physicians who were arguing with her, that was a big wake-up call that the patient is the first, second, and third priority in this conversation. What the doctors want to do follows that. We had a group of patients that we called our heroes. We actually have a plaque on our wall about people like this. And this lady with her somewhat obscene and very politically incorrect approach to life became one of our heroes for teaching all the other staff that her dignity counted.
Fascinating. What would be your advice to people who, you know, have been diagnosed with a chronic illness and are struggling with it, you know, have gotten several opinions and are just, you know, confused and are not sure where to go next? What would you say?
I would say, number one, if they, and obviously it's hard to make a person do this, is speak up. And number two, demand of the doctor, what do you really know, and what are you just guessing at right now? Mm. And then to take that part that they're guessing at and make sure that their opinions count when those guesses are made.
Yeah, very, very important. Okay, and let's talk about some of the things that are in your book. You talk in your book about certain stories, right? You tell certain stories. And then you also have a chapter on time. And explain that, because, again, time is everything, but particularly when you're diagnosed.
Well, that chapter is partly about what I spoke about a minute ago, about the instant clock calendar and generational time. But it also is about the fact that we give diseases labels, but I give descriptions, for instance, of patients who had one label 5 years ago and a different label today. And I've even got a patient who's I refer to as Milagros. That actually was her name. And Milagros means miracles in Spanish. When I first saw her, she was in renal failure on dialysis as a